everybody. Welcome to episode 793 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your Webtoon Wednesday episode for the week, and I'm going to be talking to the creator of Luff, which is a really fun and interesting romance comic from Webtoon. I just wanted to come on before to kind of get you up to date on what's going on with the Comic Source. Obviously spent last weekend in Anaheim, California, and it was a blast seeing all the creators and friends and meeting listeners and new fans, running our contest, all that kind of stuff was really great. So I want to thank everybody who said hi and who participated in the contest and who came by for a lanyard. That was all a whole lot of fun. So obviously I didn't get a chance to read as many comics over the weekend as I normally do or put out as many episodes as I normally do being on the road. So playing a little bit of catch up right now. So appreciate everybody's patience and continuing support. So let's dive into the episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Webtoon Wednesday. Have another great, really intriguing Webtoon strip to talk to you about today. And I have the creator of that strip joining me. So the strip is called Luff, and I have Adi, who's joining me today, the creator of the strip. So Adi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's really, as I said, a really intriguing strip, sort of relevant with technology and the way it's become a part of our lives and everything. So I really want to kind of dive into that. But first, I always like to ask people when they come on the show the first time, kind of how their journey to becoming a Webtoon creator started. So do you have a history with comics? Did you grow up reading them, anime, manga? Like, where did your fandom start?
Well, I started reading comics like really young. I'm talking like preschool. I couldn't even read. I just saw the pictures and I liked them a lot. I used to live in a really small town, so I could only get like random separate numbers of DC comics, but I really liked Green Lantern and Batman and all that. But as I grew older, I grew up in Mexico. They started airing a lot of anime on TV, and I started liking that aesthetic a lot. So when we moved into a bigger city, I was able to start getting manga comics. And so I started reading manga like Magic Knight Rayearth and Sailor Moon and Ranma One Half and Cardcaptor Sakura. I even got a little bit of Witch, so I also read European Magical Girls. And that kind of set my love for visual storytelling. But regarding like storytelling per se, I always wanted to tell stories. I was always part of a literature club, whether at school or outside of it. And I wrote a lot of short stories and fairy tale stuff. I also used to have a D&D group, and I used to be the dungeon master for that. So I was very used to writing stories for my friends, like stories that I never thought would go anywhere except for us to have fun. So when I started drawing my first Webtoon, Faust, I didn't quite set up to be a featured creator in Webtoons. I just had this story that I wanted to draw, and I wanted to draw it for me and for my friends to read it. And I didn't quite expect anything from it. And actually, at the time, I didn't have a job, so I had the free time to be able to draw it for my friends. And well, in fact, the very same day I was going to stop publishing it to focus on looking for a job, I got an email from Webtoons asking me if I wanted to be a featured creator. And I'm very thankful for Webtoons and the faith they had on me.
Yeah, that's wow. That's that's good timing, to say the least.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you always had an interest in storytelling and the style of your story with the manga and growing up watching it. Did you draw a lot as a child as well? Were you really creative?
Oh yeah, I have I still keep like 3 or 4 notebooks full of comics that don't have dialogues because I still didn't know how to write. So it's almost like, it's not quite stick figures because I liked to like fill them in. They look more like the bathroom sign guys. but with faces. Yeah. And like I made, like I said, I used to read DC comics. So I had like superhero selves and I had like powers and like flying and all that kind of stuff. I have always loved to draw, and comics has always been a long part of it, like a big part of it.
Yeah. So you, and so that's, I find that interesting because it's almost like you had this artistic side of you where you like to draw and create, but then you also had the storytelling side of you. So it almost seems like you were destined at some point to become a comic creator or you know, telling stories through sequential art because you had the two separate interests, right? But never necessarily a goal to be a creator, but just those two separate interests that eventually led you to Webtoon, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is, growing as a female in Mexico, I didn't think I would ever be able to draw comics for a living. I always thought this was going to be just like a hobby for myself, and like all these stories I had in my head would be only read by my friends. And I was fine with it. I think I kind of never thought that I would be given the chance. And that's why I'm so grateful to Webtoons, because I am literally starting and learning with them.
Yeah, and you mentioned your previous title, Faust. Before we dive into Luff, do you want to give a quick shout out to Faust? Let us know what it's all about in case anybody wants to go and check it out.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, my first webtoon, like you said, it's called Faust, and it's a story about a guy who sells his soul for the guy he loves, only that it's not the right guy. It's a guy that looks like him. And it is a very personal story, even though it's not based on my own experiences per se. It's full of things that I wanted to say. I wanted to talk about the expectations and idealizations that people project onto each other and how that leads to heartbreak. And I wanted to express the complexity of people, and I wanted to set it against the black and white of Christianity, which is why there's like the devil and the deals and everything. Basically, it's kind of inspired by how my very religious family would always think like religious people were somehow better than people outside their religion. Like they wanted me to have friends on my church and not outside. And because they were like, no, they are better people. And I kind of wanted to prove them wrong. I wanted to show them that there was generally no bad or good people. There's just people doing the best they can with what they have and what they know. Or at least that's what I want to believe.
Well, when you grow up Catholic and you're Hispanic, I think the older generation, those judgments sort of go hand in. I know, because I can relate to that, because my grandmother and even my mother to some extent, yeah, they're a little, yeah, they don't always, if somebody, first time you make a new friend, well, do they go to church? Well,
it's
kind of funny that way. So,
Yeah, and I met a lot of good people at church, but I also met like my best friend at school, and she didn't go to church, and like many really good dear friends who have never set a foot inside a church, and that doesn't make them any worse or any better. Also, you know, like I wanted to set that against the black and white of Christianity, and so we have like this group of characters, like a guy who is very into the church but doesn't realize that he's very prideful, and so he is a little bit more of a bad person than the guy who is like possessed by the devil, who turns out to be this well-meaning, meek person. And they learn from each other and they grow and become friends again, because they were friends in the past and were separated by this black and white dichotomy that religious parents seem to want to dictate.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting, it's something that's relevant to today, I think. You know, whatever your politics are, you know, belonging and you know, having an open mind and inclusiveness, you know, whether you think that's a political statement or not, I think it's something we need more of. You know, we just we just need to do a little bit better getting along and listening to other people's opinions instead of just waiting for your turn to speak. You know what I mean? Like, actually take the time, instead of thinking about what you want to say, actually listen to what they're, what other people are saying. I think that's a, that's a really worthwhile theme to explore. So I haven't checked out Faust yet. I'm totally hooked on Luff. And based on that, I definitely need to go back and check out Faust. But yeah, let's shift gears here and talk about Luff. It's, there's so many interesting concepts to be explored here. So why don't you give our listeners an idea of what this new strip from Webtoon is about that you're currently working on.
Okay, so Luff is the story of a girl named Beatriz Torres, and she's a girl who lives in a fictional Latin American country named Toloa. And now the government of Toloa discovered years ago, like generations ago, that people with closely matching fingerprints make better couples, and that better couples leads to happier families and more productive workers and less crime. And so they make it mandatory. And when you come of age at 22, not an 18, you must go and register your biometrics so you can be matched with someone else. And the government doesn't force you with one person. Like, you don't go and like they're like, this is your match and you have no choice. No, you are given a list of prospects and you are free to choose whoever interests you more. Of course, in this world, people usually just take the person with whom they have the highest percentage of compatibility. And that's how it usually goes. But when Beatriz goes, however, she gets two matches who are not only a really high number, they are also exactly the same score. However, Beatriz doesn't quite want a boyfriend. She wants a scholarship. She's working towards her dreams. So in order to buy herself some time, she accidentally sets off the whole story by stating in live television that she's going to break the tie between the two guys by doing her own research, by deciding on by herself. And that's how the story begins.
Yeah, now, and when we first see Luff kind of introduced in the story, we see it on a billboard, and it almost looks like it's a dating app. Like, that was my first inclination. I, you know, I'm reading the first episode, and I'm like, oh, okay, Luff. I know that's the title, and here it is. And it looks like maybe it's a dating app, and then we find out later that it's so much more than that. But I wonder, I have to ask you this. Luff as a dating app, do you have experience with online dating apps?
I have experience with online dating because that's how I met my husband, but we didn't meet through a dating app. Like I have seen my friends use dating apps and I was not brave enough to use dating apps, but I do have experience with online dating.
Funny.
Luff, however, like you said, it's much more than a dating app. It's by its letters, like it stands for Law of Union, Finances, and Family. That's what Luff means. And it's integrated. Now it's integrated into the government. So it's like matched or OkCupid were part of the USA government, which is crazy cakes, I know. But that's kind of how it works. You reach a legal age and then you have to go register at your local law office, like it was a DMV or something, and you can take your biometrics taken. So you fill out a form or you write your sexual preference or your dietary needs, that kind of stuff, along with a bunch of privacy agreements and all that. And once you register, you are matched against their database, which includes the whole country, and you are given a list of names and percentages of matching. You can then message those people if you want, maybe set up a meeting place, ask them out to get to know them. And then when you like someone, you can officially become a match. Which is has legal standing in this world. And that's how it's supposed to work. However, since having a high percentage is really beneficial for the people living in the story, people usually just match with whoever is the highest score, and that's that. In fact, that's a very crucial part of what I want to say with bluff, because they are, people have stopped matching with people and they are looking for a number.
Yeah, see, that's interesting to me, because even before the world of dating apps, and so I'm kind of an age where dating apps just kind of came, like, I can't imagine being a young person growing up now with social media. Like, that would be, that doesn't sound like a fun time to me. I did meet my wife through a dating, from a dating app. I met her online. It was an online service. So, and that was when it was first, it was kind of normal. Now with Tinder and all that stuff, it's just crazy and insane. So, but I was kind of an early adopter, just because I'm, you know, into technology or whatever. But it's so interesting to think about it, because, yeah, with the way people can relate to it now with social media, and like you said, with choosing a match just based on a number rather than, and I'm sure the older generations are thinking, yeah, how could you possibly meet somebody online and have it, you know, work out or whatever, you need to meet somebody face to face and have the chemistry. And but it's so interesting, because I think in a way we all can relate. We've all been on bad dates. We've all probably been on good dates. And how you initially meet somebody isn't really that important. If the chemistry's there, the chemistry's there. But when you look at the world of love, the world that you're creating, yeah, all of a sudden it's not about romantic feelings or, you know, same values. All of a sudden it becomes about this number, because it opens doors to other financial opportunities and you know, career opportunities. It's in a way, it's a little bit of a cynical look at love, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically, it's if I can get a little personal here, I said love in a Latin America country for a reason, and that's because of my personal experience. I have a lot of female friends who have like their own businesses, have gotten their masters in fields that they love. They are traveling the country, realizing their dreams. And yet they're looked down by their families and friends because they are single. And it gets to the point where they themselves stop seeing value in what they have achieved only because they don't have a partner. And I mean, there are women I know who are trapped in an absolutely horrible relationship, and they refuse to break it because they don't want to be looked down for being single. And of course, I always try and talk them out of it, but I don't think I'm very, very good at talking because they don't seem to listen. So one day I started thinking, what if the government thought like our families and friends do? What if being in a relationship affected how much taxes you paid, or affected how the chances your children have to get into a good school? And that is kind of what I want to explore with love. Like, what if we take how things are right now, in, at least in Latin America, in my case, because I can't speak for other countries, but Latin America, it's like this. And what if we take it, this situation, and just like take it up three notches? Like, what if the government became involved? Like, would people stop looking at others like potential partners for life and just want the status? Or would love still prevail? Would is love still valid when you are just using it for your own status? Like, that kind of question is what I want to explore with this comic.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's part of, it's part of the Latin American culture, you know, and I think it has changed. It has gotten better, you know, over time. But certainly my, you know, like with my grandparents' generation, let's say, it was kind of expected that the, you know, the female was going to be the one that, you know, cooked the meals and, you know, took care of the family and things like that. And like I said, I know it has changed, but you're right. There still is that stigma, especially in Latin American countries, because it was part of the culture for so long. But even here, you know, in the United States, it's the same way. When you start seeing a woman who's older, say in her, you know, 40s, and she's still single, never been married, you know, people will say, well, what's wrong with her? What, you know, they just assume because she's not married, because she's not in a relationship, you know, there must be something wrong with her. So it's nice to know that times are changing, but I think we still have a way to go, honestly.
Yeah. I think that's a very high school way of seeing things. Like when you're in high school and it's like, oh no, everybody has a boyfriend except me. What's wrong with me? Like, right. Come on guys, we're all adults. We can get past this.
All right, well, let's talk. I don't want any spoilers because I'm not anybody who listens to the show knows that I'm not that. But I do wonder, do you already know who B ends up with between Juju or is it Danny?
Yeah, I already know.
Okay.
It hasn't changed. Like when I originally made the story or thought about the story, this is what I'm going to say, was something different, someone different. But from the time I started publishing, it hasn't changed. I know exactly who she's going to end up with.
Okay, now the fans, the readers, as you see in the comments, is there, I'm so curious about this, is there a majority, does it seem like the fan base wants her to end up with one or the other? Is there a clear
favorite? Oh yeah, everybody is Team Daniel. Everybody is Team Daniel because they saw that he has like this poster dogs that he's fostering for shelter, and he has Ada also. He has Hyacinth Macaw. I don't know if those are the words. I'm sorry, my English is really bad. In Spanish, it's Guacamaya Jacinta, and that's how I say it always. But he has his bird, and he has the dogs, and everybody loves animals, and they're like, he's a good guy because he has animals. And I'm like, well, yeah, but he's very rude too. Like, give Juju a chance, give Julian a chance. He's also a good guy. He just grew in a really bad place where they taught him that women were made to be ogled at, to be like, you know, seen as sex objects. He's gonna learn, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, based on the quality of the storytelling so far, I'm sure we're gonna see eventually that they both have positives and negatives, and you could say the same thing about B. You know, she's maybe too focused on career. You know, she
might
be willing to sacrifice some romantic happiness for career, and that's not necessarily a good way to live life either, because then you don't have balance and you can burn out. So if there's anything that I've learned in my years on this earth, it's everything in moderation. So I totally get why everybody would be on the whole dogs and puppies thing, because I'm not necessarily a dog person, but we have two, and that's because of my that's because of my wife and daughter. So yeah, they're constantly puppy crazy. So I totally get that. Now in terms of like creating the story, you know, you already know who she ends up with, so for you there's not really a mystery there. But for us readers, you've got to balance how much information you want to give us, you know, maybe lead us down one path thinking that she's going to end up with somebody. But then maybe two episodes later, we think, oh, now it's gone the other way. It swings back the other way. So you've got to constantly keep us guessing. But you also have to balance that with kind of the pace of the story. So is that a challenge? Like giving us some information, but not too much information, and making sure you keep the story going and everybody gets like enough kind of information, you know, we're learning about each character kind of at the same pace. Is that something you're conscious of, or does it come really easily for you?
No, I'm really conscious about that. I have an actual map for the story. Like, I have like a timeline where I write down and move things around, like, oh no, this is like too much Daniel. I have to move it so that Julian gets a chance to shine too. And then I'm going to have to switch this episode back before this one, so you can see this other interaction. I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but yeah, like it is a juggling act, but it's one I enjoy a lot. I can say that I have enough experience with keeping information from people from my Dungeons & Dragons Dungeon Master days. I know how to keep things behind the board so they don't see it. So I enjoy it a lot, but it doesn't get any easier. It's fun every time. At least it's very fun.
Wow, so that's really interesting that your years as a dungeon master kind of prepared you to do this. Now, when you right when you started with Webtoon with Faust, did you follow that same kind of pattern and process of working, like laying out a map for everything, or is it something that's evolved over time?
And that's something I kind of evolved over time, because also as a dungeon master, you are also forced to improvise. Like maybe you have this whole scene planned in your head where they're going to go into the dungeon and people are like, no, let's go back to town. And you're like, oh no, I didn't prepare anything. So with Faust, it was also it was kind of like that. I had to learn how to set down a map and try to stay on it because I was the only player. So at the beginning, it was kind of like, I'm just going to go where it's fun. And then at the middle, I was like, no, I have to set down a map and I have to set down when things are going to happen, what things are going to happen. And I'm going to start like shooting it straight towards the goal. Because it's fun. It's okay to have fun with your stories, but you also have to have a goal. At least that's what I think. As a storyteller, what you must do, because if you're just telling a story for fun, then you might as well just go have a coffee with a friend. Like,
right now you kind of need those to hit those landmarks, but you don't want to have it so rigid that there's not the chance to kind of improvise or improve things if you realize, oh, this will work better this way. So you want to have some flexibility, but you want to make sure you kind of hit those kind of those landmarks or those milestones in the story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, like I said, what I've been doing with Bluff right now. I have this page that I wrote with pencil because I was like, I'm going to keep changing things around, so I need something I can erase. And I keep just like moving things around and adding post-its and like moving switch. It feels like you're playing chess with yourself.
Now, do you plan out the cliffhangers that carefully as well? Because I've been reading quite a few strips lately that really take advantage of the cliffhanger, and it's such a great kind of tool to keep readers coming back, right? Like, I know for me, I'm scrolling and I get to the end, and it's a cliffhanger, and I'm trying to keep scrolling, like, no, come on, please, there's more.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. Well, it is a little bit of a skill that I learned with working with Faust, because of course, like you said, you have to want to keep them coming back. And it's something that I could not always achieve with Faust, but I think I'm getting a little better. I'm getting the hang of it with Love. And also my editor, Eunice Bake, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She's very good and gives me a lot of advice on how to make the cliffhanger a little better. Like maybe I want to finish it a little too softly, and she's like, no, you know what would make it more exciting? If you add like another panel where this happens. And I'm like, oh, you're right. And little by little, I'm learning from her input too, and how to make more fun cliffhangers, because at the end, that's what I want to make, like something fun that people will want to continue reading.
Yeah, do you get a lot of comments when you get like a really good cliffhanger? Do you get a lot of comments going, oh, and people trying to figure out what's going to happen?
Yeah, people are really sweet, and they send me messages on Instagram like, oh, hey, I wish you had the fast pass system so I could pay extra money to read the next episode right now. And I'm like, oh, that's really sweet, but give me some time to draw the episode too, please.
Yeah, and I, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the themes that you're exploring, about how there can be, you know, expectations and kind of the cynical look at love with, instead of, you know, romance or someone who's going to make you happy, you're just care about the score. Have you noticed that, the fan base is kind of catching on to the themes that you're wanting to explore? Is there a discussion going on amongst themselves about them, the themes?
I think what I like that they are catching up to is that none of the two guys are perfect. Like, no one in the story is perfect. Everybody has something. I like that is something that I am bringing also from Faust. But I like to show that people are complex, and it's not like you're going to find a prince charming who is everything you have ever wanted. And it's also showing that you yourself are not perfect either, and that it's not bad to not be perfect. So I think that is the thing that they are starting to realize, that because I see them go like, oh, they are both good, but they're also both bad. Right. I don't know who to ship her with. And I'm like, that's people. That's how people are in real life.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what makes the story so relatable. Because I look at it as they're both, like, I actually tend to focus on the positives when I'm reading stories like this. And so I see the positives in both of them, because I kind of relate to them more than I do B, probably because I'm a guy and they're guys. And so for me, it's always in the back of my mind, like, well, I know she's going to pick one of them eventually, but I already kind of feel bad for the, I don't know who it is, obviously, but I'm already starting to, like, whoever doesn't get picked, I'm going to feel bad. Like, I hope B lets him down gently.
don't worry. We have a lot of stories still. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Do you know how many episodes, or are you going to have multiple seasons? Do you have that planned out yet?
I do have a number of episodes. I don't know if I should say how many. Let's say it's plus 50.
Okay. That's fair enough. Now, you did set this in a fictional country. You mentioned that. So when you started planning out the story, did you start from the main characters first? Did you build out the world first? Like, did you have the idea, okay, I want to have, you know, Luff as an organization, and then built the main characters? Which direction did you start from first?
Funny enough, I started with the system first. Mm. I started with the whole fingerprints and how it would work and how you'd pay less or more taxes. Like, I have a notebook full of all that things, like very, very adult tax paying school entrance exams thing full of all that things. And then, I mean, I have the characters assigned in my head as people, I didn't have an image for them. I just knew, like, oh, B is going to be like very work focused, and she's going to be like very one track mind. And then Daniel, he's going to be more like disappointed with real people, but in love with animals. And then I had all that in my head, but then it came time to like sit down and draw them. And I think I finally finalized their designs last year, so not very long ago. Like, I sat down and I thought I had to draw them. So I made Julian, according to their personalities, I made like Julian this big, big dumb block, like a square. And I made Daniel like this sharp, pointy person, like with very rough edges. And I made B. I wanted to make her different from the traditional feminine protagonist in love manga, because when you read romantic manga, especially shoujo manga, the girl is always like this tiny, meek, delicate flower. The guys tower over her, and she's like so weak. And I wanted to have her in the same standing. Like, I wanted to make them equals.
Right.
So I had to make her tall, and I had to make her strong. And I don't quite like drawing boobs, so I made her flat. But I did give her like some powerful hips, like a good Latina woman. And the thing that most, like, all of them have something that regarding their personality or their story in their characters. Like I said, Julian is like this big square thing that is very old fashioned in the Mexican kind of way. with the machismo and everything. And so he's like a big square. And like I said, Daniel is all sharp edges and he's like very unstable. Sometimes he's happy, sometimes he's not. Sometimes he's sweet, sometimes he's not. It's like a triangle standing on one of the edges, just like balancing back and forth. And the design for B that is more about her personality, her role in the story is, funnily enough, her hair. Because it's parted in the middle, like she is literally standing in the middle of a road, and she has like, so it's like she has a road in her head where she pushes her hair back, and then she has the two options coming from the sides of her head. Like, I know it's funny to see it like that, but in my head, I was like, yes, this is perfect. This is how she must look like.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So when you get ready to do an episode, what is your process like? Do you draw it first? Do you have like the script and know what the dialogue is? Do you have like the basic plot and then draw it and then go back and put the dialogue in? How do you normally work?
Well, I, like I said, I have already a timeline. So I start there. I take whatever is going to happen in the episode. I usually have it just like bullet points. And then I have to get out of the house because I'm always drawing and I cannot write in my home anymore. So we go sit at a cafe, me and my husband, and we try to relax for a bit. And then we start like, okay, let's talk about this. And let's talk about what's going to happen in the episode. And then we start like, not writing, but kind of like talking the dialogues. Like they're going to say this and they're going to say that. And my husband is also Latino, so we always talk in Spanish, which is a little bit, makes it a little bit hard because then we are like, wait, how do you say this in English? We add a lot of, we speak with a lot of like colloquial things and sayings and things like that that simply do not translate to English right. In the same way. So I have to write down the dialogues to the best of my abilities. And sometimes we look like crazy people. Sometimes people around us like overhear our English conversation, which are the dialogues of the characters. And they're like, ooh, they make faces. Like it's actually really funny and cute. And then when we have the dialogue, I come back home and I start drawing thumbnails for every page. And the thumbnails, I just scan them and I send them to my editor with my horrible, horrible dialogue because English is not my first language and it has a lot of grammatical errors and the such. And she's a saint. She helps me out like with the English, with what I want to say. She sometimes sits down like, okay, what were you trying to say here? And I have to be like, oh, it's kind of like this idea. So she helps me with the dialogues. And then it starts, like my work week really starts. Like I start straight on things because I have no time to sketch down. And then I start coloring and it's like lettering is really, it all happens really fast so that I can meet my deadline because 1 week is a very short deadline, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's probably as soon as you finish with one, you immediately start up with the next one.
Yeah, sometimes I'm not even done sending the files and we already have to go and write the next episode. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll send the files later.
Okay, and I based on that, I'm in no way trying to make more work for you. And you know, like you said, you still have a lot more of this story to tell, but I'm so intrigued by the fact that you started with the system first, kind of the left system first, because immediately what springs into mind is you could tell so many other stories. Like next time you could do one where a guy goes in and has a match or doesn't have a match. There's, you know, with this system that you created, this world that you've created, there's so many stories you could tell of kind of.
Yes, yes. There are so many stories that I would love to tell. Like, I would love to tell a story about, say, an asexual person who has to go through the system to be able to function in the society, and what that means to that experience, or what I, yeah, what a person without a match would feel like. Like, personally, it was almost a story I told, because my husband, like I said, I met him online and he lived in a different country. So if I were to live in the locked system, I wouldn't have had a good match. I wouldn't have had him as a match. So I do try to touch upon some of this in the story, but it's like very, like, it's for the secondary characters, and it's like maybe some people will mention it in passing what happened. There's a lot, like you said, when I started building the system, I was like, oh man, I kind of want to tell this other story too, and this other story too.
Yeah, the first thing that popped into my mind was, I was like, well, what if you already met somebody and you were like completely in love, and then you go and get your score and you guys find out that, you know, you're like 10% match, but you want to spend your life with this
person. I don't want to go into spoiler territory, but you're actually going to see what happens with that exact scenario.
Yeah, because that would be terrible. Oh, you know, we're such a terrible match. We can't, you know, get a house or have a family or, you know, get any kind of loans. Yeah, that would just be. Well, I'm glad that you have many more ideas, because, again, I'm not trying to give you more work, but it's just, you just created a system that I think is, because, again, it has to do with living life, being successful, you know, familial expectations, but also love and relationships. And I think that we can all relate to all of those things. So it's a really rich world. And I look forward to the rest of the story and possibly other stories in this world.
Thank you so much.
Now, I do want to talk a little bit about Webtoon specifically, because we do have a lot of people that listen on Webtoon Wednesdays that are aspiring creators. And so you mentioned that you started on Webtoon on the Discover side with Faust.
Yes.
But how did you come to find Webtoon? Like, what was it about Webtoon where you said, okay, I'm finally going to take the plunge and I'm going to do it on Webtoon?
Well, I used to be the kind of people that would be like, oh, I can tell a better story than this. I can draw a comic better than this. But I'd always have an excuse, like, oh, well, I could set it up on Tumblr, but the reading format isn't good. Or like, oh, well, I'd have to buy a domain, and I don't have that kind of money, like, to buy a domain and keep it, or stuff like that. So when I found Webtoons, which was through an ad, funny enough, I thought, wow, these people already have like a platform, and that is full of people, so I wouldn't have to also use the excuse of, oh, I have to find like my colleague and the engagement and everything. And I was like, this is it. This is the place that lets me have no excuses. I will start doing it. And that's what I want to tell, like, other creators. Like, sometimes you are your own enemy and you're like, yeah, I can do this. And of course you can. You know yourself, you know your ability, you can do it. Just set up and do it. Stop making excuses. Stop making excuses. And just go for it, because there is no way you can get better other than doing it. So if you have a story in your head and you think, I don't have enough talent for this, or like, nobody's gonna read me, no, just do it. What if nobody reads you? Well, what if, like, doesn't happen, whatever. It means that if you make a mistake, nobody will read it, and then you can go on with your life next and do something better. So my advice to people is to just do it.
Yeah.
Like the Nike commercial.
If you're worried this is what I always tell aspiring creators. If you're worried that no one will read it and that's why you're not creating something, then if you're not creating anything, then you are ensuring that no one can read your creation.
True. That's a very good point.
If
yeah.
you create something, at least, you know, it's like the lottery. If you, yeah, the odds are long of you winning the lottery, but if you don't buy a ticket, they're absolutely zero. So same thing with creating something. If you're worried no one's going to read it, you are, by not creating it, you're ensuring it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Make it. Maybe they'll read it, maybe not, but at least then you know.
Yeah. And at least you put it out. Like if you have something to say, put it out. Like that is something that I also tell. I have a couple of friends who are making comics, and sometimes they get really discouraged that they don't have a big readership. And I always tell them to draw something for themselves, something that they are having fun with. Because if you are having fun with it, then the people who read it will have fun too.
Yep.
And if they don't, well, at least you're having fun with it, and that makes it worth your while.
Yeah. Now, when you were creating as a younger person, you probably worked traditionally, right? Just with pencil, paper, more traditional tools, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But now you do things digitally?
Yeah. I still do some, you know, that when you go traditional, you get used to the feeling of paper and pencil and everything. And I, for example, I cannot thumbnail on digital. I just can't. I don't know. There's something about that feels distant about the program and like my hand. I don't know. I have to do it traditionally. I have to take a ruler and make squares and like draw and have an eraser and like make a mess of my desk with all the eraser like shavings. And that's how I do it. But if younger people who are more used to like working perhaps on an iPad or like on a tablet, that's fine too. Like you can work with both.
Well, I wanted to, the reason I ask is because I wonder about the kind of the learning process to transition. I know a lot of comic creators, some, the transition was very easy for them. They transitioned from traditional to digital and didn't have any problems. Some went to digital and went back because they just didn't like the feel. But I just want to kind of get your thoughts. If there's anybody out there who's like, well, I the reason I can't do Webtoon is because I just can't work digitally. I mean, is it really that hard to learn? I mean, it would seem to me that, you know, and I'm not an artist by any stretch, but it seems to me that all the principles, the artistic technique is the same on either, right?
Yes. Yes. It's basically the same. And it actually, I would say that there are very many things that working digitally makes easier. Like you can manipulate your lines better. You can manipulate color better than when you're working traditionally. And it is a new set of skills. And sometimes that's what's intimidating, that you have to learn. For example, I had to learn to use a 3D modeling program called SketchUp. So I could make the backgrounds the way I wanted. And to save me some time too, because drawing the backgrounds by hand, which I started doing when I was doing Faust and then slowly moved into 3D, it's more time intensive. And when you have like a weekly deadline, you just don't have that kind of time. So I could have said, well, I don't do 3D. I have never done this. Or I could just, I mean, I have the internet and everybody has the internet. You can use it to read tutorials or like find a class that teaches you how to use the program. And then you can use it to enhance what you already know from traditional work. Like working traditional teaches you a lot about how and when to use what kind of medium. And it's the same with digital. Like, oh, I can use 3D here, or I could use just a brush and a texture, or I could use a gradient to achieve this and that. Like it's a new tool set, but like you said, it's basically the same principles. So I say, if you are worried about changing to digital because it's scary, just jump, just take the plunge. It will help you, if anything, to learn new things that you will be able to apply to your traditional work if you choose to go back.
Okay, and another thing that's good advice. And another thing that I wanted to ask you about that I like to get creators' opinions on, and I think this is sort of unique to Webtoon for their creators because when you have a successful Webtoon, you know, it comes out on a weekly basis. It is, as we've mentioned, can be a real grind, kind of a grueling deadline. As soon as you finish one episode, you immediately have to start on the next because you have that built-in fan base. You don't want to let them down. It's such a great community. But you always have to be careful to have balance too, right? Like balance what you're doing because, like you said, if you're having fun creating your strip, it comes through and people are going to have fun reading it. If it stops being fun and starts feeling like a grind, I think that comes through also and your work can suffer. So what advice do you have for somebody who's really plugging away on balancing the kind of your art, but also having a life, you know, and spending time, quality time with friends and family and things like that?
Well, I think it's really funny that you mention it because when I started Faust and I started as my real job, I really just dove into it and forgot about everything else. Like I am a workaholic and I love to work hard. Like I love to pull all-nighters and like stay drawing and working and delivering a deadline. It's like a rush for me. So I started doing that and it became very, very unhealthy with Faust. My mom is an occupational doctor. Like she specializes in workplace related like injuries and stuff. And she treated my arm because I was starting to like hurt my shoulder and my elbow for how I drew on my back and everything. And so I had to take a break. I had to take a breather and reevaluate that my life had become the work. So what I had to do was like set a schedule for myself so I can be like, okay, I'll wake up at 6 because it takes me an hour to get off bed. So I'll get off bed at 7. And then I'll do yoga for my back and for my shoulder, and then I'll work. And whatever work I have, I'll have to stop at like 1 p.m. so I can have like an early lunch. Like, and then I can go back to work after the dishes are done. And then like, oh, well, my husband comes home at like 4. So I have to stop everything at 4 and then like maybe watch something with him after dinner, or like maybe play a game with him. Just like set up a timer. Of course I cannot sit down and play like 8 hours like I used to do when I was like a student or something. But I can achieve it if, like that balance if I time myself. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch like one episode of this series, but it's just going to be like half an hour and then I'm back to work. And then like, I think for me, that's how it works better. Like setting like a schedule for myself and keeping myself on it, like keeping myself responsible for it.
So I think
making sure I don't miss like an hour, like, oh no, I forgot to eat. Things like that I used to do a lot when I was doing Faust. I lost a lot of weight and I hurt my back and things like that. So if you are unhealthy and if you are weak, you can't work well. Like your work suffers. If you're tired, you don't draw as well as you do if you were well rested, or if you are writing an episode, it wouldn't be as funny maybe as if you were rested than if you are tired.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to burn yourself out, and I think that's a really good advice, making a schedule. And I think it works both ways. It works for somebody like you that needs to be reminded to take those breaks, spend time with your husband, make sure you eat. But it's also good for the people that are super creative, but they have a hard time like buckling down. You know, maybe they're, well, you know what, I'm going to binge this show and watch like 6 episodes of it today and I'll do more work tomorrow. They need the schedule too, to be reminded, no, between whatever, you know, 7 a.m. and noon, you're going to be at the drawing table. You're going to be working on your craft. So that's really good advice. I wanted to ask you, Ari, about connecting with other creators too. Have you had a chance to to meet any other Webtoon creators and kind of compare notes and kind of, you know, you're all in the same boat, so to speak, and compare war stories?
Well, I haven't met anyone in person, really, but I have exchanged messages with a couple of them. I know Walking North, the author of Aerial Magic. I know Miriam, the author of Hoki, and HP, the author of a weapon that ended not too long ago, Outside the Circle, I think it was. Oh, I'm so bad with names. And I have exchanged like stories a bit with them, and we have like, we support each other, but sadly, I haven't given myself the time to like become good friends with any of them, which I really regret because they are wonderful people just from the time I talked with them. But like I said, one of the things that I most forget is to socialize on the internet. Like, I'm very good at taking breaks outside of the computer, but when I sit on the computer, I'm always like, okay, I'll just send a message. Nope, it's all work. It's all work. It's like, oh, I'm on the computer, I'm going to work again. So I'm actually kind of really bad at keeping contact with people. I hope they don't think that I don't want to talk to them, because I do.
Well, what we really need to do is get you out to a convention where Webtoon is exhibiting, so you get a chance to meet some of the creators that way. It's from all the creators I've talked to, and from the times I've spent with Webtoon creators at conventions, it's a really fun time just to kind of recharge your batteries, you know, hear what other people are doing, meet some fans, and it really gives you like a boost of creative energy. You can't wait to get back and get back to work.
Oh, yeah, I would love to go to a convention. I'm a little bit shy in person. Like, I get very giggly and my face gets completely red. I'm very much made for indoor activities and like solo activities. I'm very shy, but I would love to meet them in person. I live in Florida and it's so far away from every convention ever. It's like nobody comes here.
One of these days we'll make it happen. Yeah, because the other thing that's great about it, like I said, is meeting the fans. And it seems like you have a really good reader base for Luff. Did you have a lot of fans that were reading Faust that came over, that were anxiously awaiting your next project?
Oh, yeah. It was really, really sweet when people would like come into the comments and be like, wait, I recognize this art style. It's Arjan. I was like, oh, yeah. And I know their usernames and I recognize them. I was so excited because, Faust didn't have like that big of a readership. So I got to recognize the names of the people who would usually comment. And I'm just so excited to have them back and reading, and it's such an honor that they decide to give me another chance with another story. I'm so happy to see them back. It's like meeting old friends.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best things about Webtoon is the fact that it's such a great community of fans that you have that instant sort of reaction to an episode, right? Like, normally when, like, let's say a traditional comic is released, if the creator wants to kind of know how it's received, they can still go to social media, they can go to Twitter, they can go to Instagram, Facebook, and they can kind of get an idea of what the reception is for the content. But this is different because it's right there in the same place. Like, your strip comes out on Webtoon, and if you want to see the fan reaction to the strip, it's right there on Webtoon. So do you go and check it out, like right when an episode drops, to see what everybody thinks?
I'm a little bit of a coward, to be honest. I get really like worried about the reactions every time, even though it's always been good. So I'm like, I always bug my husband about it. I'm like, hey, can you check the comments? Has so-and-so commented already? I always ask him. And once he's like, yes, everything is fine, I can breathe and I'm so happy. And like I said, like people are so nice. They send me like really nice messages, like on Twitter and stuff. They are like so understanding. If I ever say something like, oh man, I'm tired from this week's work or something, they are like, take care of yourself. Don't worry. We can wait. And it's just the sweetest thing. Like, I am so lucky to have such sweet readers. And it's such, I feel blessed.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, they can wait unless it's one of those cliffhangers and then they're... When's it coming out? Well, again, Ari, I really want to thank you. It's been a blast talking to you. I hope when you do get out of convention, I'm there and we can meet face-to-face. It would be great to do that. But I wanted to give you a chance to let everybody know on social media where to follow you, where's the best place to find out and be able to kind of interact with you and give feedback on the reactions to the strip and all of that stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, you guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am Ari Changa in both. That's AreChanga. That's it. It's I may not post much because I, like I said, I like to work, and most of the time when I'm free, I'm away from social media. But if you ever send me like a message from any of those platforms, I will do my absolute best to reply back. And of course, like, you know, no spoilers. I'm not going to give out any spoilers, but if you have any questions or if you just want to say hi, I'm right there.
Yeah, and you can go to the show notes, listeners, and I'll have links there to Ari's social media. You can go and click on it and find her her Instagram or her Twitter. So, again, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you about the strip. Best of luck with it. I'm totally
thank
hooked.
You.
I'm gonna continue to read, and I hope that B doesn't have to clean up any more dog poop anytime soon. My hope.
Well, no promises.
Yeah, in fact, when I was reading that strip, I started like busting up laughing, and my wife's like, why are you laughing? I gave her the rundown on the, I'm like, okay, here's the story I'm reading, here's what happened, here's what she has to do. So funny, because yeah, those two dogs that we have, yeah, I don't do that. My wife picks up all the those are her dog, her or my daughter. So
well, you're very lucky because dogs are little poop factories, yes. Let me tell you.
Yes, they are.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a blast, and it's an honor that you have given me the chance to be in your podcast. Thank you so much.
You bet. My pleasure. And everybody go out there and check out Luff. It's relatable. It's fun. The artwork is incredible, and I highly recommend it.
Thank you so much.
All right. So there's links to Luff in the show notes, as well as a link to a trailer, a YouTube trailer that they created recently that you can share with your friends if you you know, want to have one of them join in reading Luff. Again, Webtoon is 100% completely free, which is absolutely amazing. Sometimes it's great to have a friend join you in reading a title. You can race to see who can get caught up first. Plus, then you have someone to talk to about it. So if you don't have anybody who's interested, you can always hit me up on social media. I'd love to talk some Luff with you. So really want to thank everybody for listening as always. We couldn't do what we do without all your support. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.